I was smashing the pieces, basically. Yeah. I remember when I took his back, the full room was spinning when I was on his back. The full room was spinning. And noises were just distorting and everything. It was crazy.
So, welcome to the Conference Credentials Couch. Alex Chino and Nick, it's great to have you here. We're going to start off with the question that we ask everybody. Is what does confidence mean to you?
Confidence means to me more so, I would say it's more of a mindset for me. Like, if I feel like in my circumstances, like whenever I'm confident, I feel like things seem to come together well for us. Like, it's say, for instance, like if I'm competing, I'm confident in myself because of the work I put in, the middle of that, to know that everything else is already in the background, already done. So when I'm confident, I have a different kind of approach to things. You know, I'm looser. I feel like I flow, like I'm much more of a flow state. I feel like when I'm confident, everything else just ties into it. You know, I feel like my cardio was never questioned. You know, like there's no little doubts in the back of my mind because of the hard work I've done, which then instills more confidence in myself. So confidence for me is essential. I think for everyone it's essential. I think like if you can do something that makes you a confident person or makes you more confident, I think you should try and approach them things and do them more often. As I say, it's something that you're building in yourself, you know what I mean? Someone else is not gonna make you confident in yourself or your abilities. I think it's something you have to research for yourself and find the things specifically for you individually that's gonna gain you confidence. So for me, training hard and being in a good headspace is what also builds the confidence, you know what I mean? Giving yourself just task setting little things for myself to do, just any way I can, just to try and instill more belief in yourself, and that just goes hand in hand with confidence. So confidence is key, obviously.
I think there's a theme in this short talk from what we're seeing with some of the guests on. You talked a little bit about preparation there in conference. You know, I can imagine, you know, we've all been in a situation where we haven't prepared enough. And guess what? We've fallen down, we've not achieved the goal that we set out to do because we haven't been fully prepped. But it's that self-belief as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And that leads us on kind of nicely. What I really, this is what I'm really excited. We've been knowing each other now, about 6 years or something.
Yeah.
Like that. And I've kind of seen so many changes in your fighting career. And I'd really like to get deep into your fighting career. So from where it all started, the different formats of fighting as well, and then a bit later on we'll move on to where you are now. But in terms of fighting, where did it start? I mean, was this something at school? Was this something like a bit later on in life?
Yeah.
Was this literally just knocking somebody out in the street? How did it come around?
So it's a mad old thing, really. So for me, I never had anybody in my family who had ever fought. I didn't really have anybody. Not as in the local people, because obviously I had family and stuff, but I mean, like, in regards of like an idol or someone who I could, like, look at and aspire to want to be like, you know. And for me, that came from watching old boxers, you know. I used to watch old boxing fights and stuff, and I always just, I don't know what it was, I could picture myself being the person in there with the bright lights on them, and I just thought, like, because obviously when we were a kid growing up as well, especially growing up all about waiting, you know, there was fights all the time and stuff like that, and there was trouble, and I just felt like, you know, to see the people who were going out there in front of the lights, I just used to think, like imagine how insane that is for somebody to be able to put themselves under that kind of pressure. And I used to look at them and see how cool they were doing it, you know, and I used to think, like, because that was, to me, it was mind-blowing, you know, for someone could be that confident in themselves and their ability to go out there and how much pressure they're putting themselves under. And I just used to vision myself being that person. And I used to think, like, I used to have put photos of Muhammad Ali on my bedroom wall and stuff, and I ended up getting this T.Y. McGirt punch bag, and I got that up in the room, and I just used to train on that by myself, you know. I just used to just want to be this thing, and it was like, it was an escape for me, you know what I mean, because I would try my hand at things and I would be all right at them, but I could never really do it, you know. I wasn't really bothered about it, and I was in trouble all the time in school, all the way through, like all the schools I was in, I was always in trouble, and it wasn't a nice place because I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like the whole structure of it all. I used to felt like trapped, like I was stuck in a like a repetitive kind of thing, like
repetitive pattern, and it was the control aspect. I used to feel like trapped by it, and I had loads going on in my personal life as well, coming through, but so I just struggled with it all. And then I ended up hearing about the boxing gym when I was young, when I was early in comprehensive school. And I went down one night, that was it. I went down, I took myself down. One of my friends who was in my school was training there. And I went, and it was crazy. Like, I'd never done anything. I'd had a couple of daft fights, as all kids do, but it was never really like anything like that. And I went there, and we were training, and then it was like, I remember being like sat in the children's room, terrified, anxious, thinking people were talking about my shoes and stuff like that. And I remember it all so clearly, you know, like, it's crazy. And like, it was just a mad thing. And then old Cliffy was one of the coaches there, and he was like, he just got me inspired through. I didn't even have a gum shield. I never forget it. I got the kicking of my life from this kid called Billy. He was twice the size of his, and punched the living daylights out of his. And I remember sitting in the change room wanting to cry, thinking, I'm never ever going to force myself to do this again. It was like a terrifying ordeal that I put myself through. And I left, and I just remember feeling like a coward, you know. And I got home, I just remember feeling like weak and feeling like, I don't know, because I just, you have this impression of yourself until you go and do something like that, and then you realize like how actually vulnerable you actually are. And then for me, it was like a wake up call. So it was like, I'm gonna force myself to do this. So I got a hold of this. So what happened was, I then forced myself to go back, and I went back, and then I didn't stop. And then I ended up fighting straight away, and then I went 9 straight off the belt. And then I lost my 10th. I actually ended up fighting one of my friends. And it was weird. It was like, I wasn't even at a fight. That was the first time I lost. I won a national title before that 10th fight, and then I lost my 10th, and then I went on another stint of winning fights. And it was just something that I got all of it, you know. I just took over, and then all the stuff that I was dealing with at home, for me, and all the trouble I was getting into, and all the people I was hanging around with, kind of like dwindled off. I don't come back in and dwindled off, but for me, it just became an escape. Like, I wasn't bothered about school at all. Academically, I didn't care. Like, for me, I was doing something that most of the people in school would want to be doing as young lads, but didn't have the confidence to do. And then that's me, who put myself in them uncomfortable situations, and force myself to do it, and then was getting traction and doing well from it. You just became a part of it. And then I did that all the way through school, and then I did that, I continued to do that when I left school. And then that's when I started training other aspects of martial arts, you know, like I started grappling and stuff. But for me, that was the start of it, you know. That I ended up, as I say, I think it was 12 years old when I walked in the gym, you know, and I'm still training now. I'm 32 now, and I had a layoff period where I lost the plot a bit. And I got in and I met some amazing people, some of the people I'm still super close with now. And I just ended up just skateboarding and traveling around and just living without stress for a little while. You know what I mean? I've lived all the way through, and then when I hit 20, I turned pro in professional MMA when I was 20 years old. And then I had 4 years off, made almost four years off cap there. And then I came back and kept fighting again, you know what I mean? But the start of the whole thing was obviously just by some miracle finding a boxing gym that was not that far from the house. It was only Barnes Junior School. I used to live near the Green Mills. It was 15-minute bike ride or whatever jog, you know what I mean? So it was on my doorstep.
I love that, just going back on how you got into it and just looking at it like Muhammad Ali and boxers like that, who were probably boxers in my opinion, and just visualising yourself with the bright lights.
Mm.
So to have that, I mean, I would imagine that would give you the confidence to step into that first gym before you got your first pummeling.
Right.
Because I can't imagine, I mean, that takes some mental strength to do that. Like,
the first time, I'll never forget the example, so the first time I ever had my first fight, right? So I remember training, getting ready, did my medical license, got all the way prepared, ready for this fight. And I remember it was at the Ramside Hall Hotel, my first fight. I fought a kid from Wallingport who'd already had a couple of fights and won them both, stoppages as well. He was a bit heavier than this. It was the first time in my life that I met my granddad, because he was a comedian and he was doing the event. It was the first time in my life I met my mum's dad. Bobby Knoxall, he was a comedian, and he was the one who was doing the MC of the show. He did a set at the interval of the thing, and that was the first time I met him. And I remember everything was fine until I got the venue, and then I seen the guy I was fighting, and then it was crazy. I remember this feeling that came over us, and I'll never forget it. I still remember the smells, I still remember the those are the scenarios that we're going through, the change room, warming up, everything about it. And the crowd that was there, and I remember thinking, like, I wish there was somewhere now that my dad could come in here and get me and take me home, because this, I do not want to be here. I remember being terrified. I remember thinking, if there's anything I could do now in my life, it would be anything other than this. And that's a God's honest truth. And I remember I was terrified. And watching the kid last fight more, what we see now, how heavy handed he was, even though one of the kids, I was only 30 kilos or something, I remember, and how heavy handed he was when he was hitting the pies. And I remember being terrified. And then as soon as I walked into the crowd, everything changed. You know, as soon as I got in there, I remember just getting in and just feeling, just, it was like a dream. It was the smells and the lights and the canvas crowd and seeing everybody there. It was like an everybody experience. And I remember the fight started and they come over super aggressive with non-stop combinations. And I remember taking the brunt of them on the gloves, and I remember swimming in the front, boom, black flash straight away, like so heavy handed. And then I ended up getting out the corner, and then I ended up picking them off. And then once I got past that first exchange and settled down, I ended up boxing his head off. I had a close fight, it was a cool fight, but I won, and I got best boxer of the show. I got the Bobby Drew Memorial Trophy because one of the fans in the club had just recently died. And I got best boxer of the whole show, probably first fight for some BBC on their home show. And it was the same show I met with Grandad, and it was just the craziest thing I'd ever experienced in my life. And then,
so did you end up having a relationship with your Grandad?
So I've spoken him a couple of times, obviously. I speak more to his sons now than I did him. But I did, I met him then, spoke to him, was with one of my uncles there, my mum's brother. Had a bit of crack with him then, and then I never seen him again until it was my fourth fight, and he was there with other family members, but not for me, they were there to just watch the boxing show. And I spoke to him a bit then. I only had a few brief encounters with him in my life, but as I see, I'm close with Brent and Ryan and a couple of the others, like who were his sons, you know what I mean? I'm a lot closer with them because obviously they were closer to my age, and I still see them. Obviously, my granddad passed away a few years ago now. But I just will never forget, it was a crazy, crazy experience, and I've had plenty of them since. But that one was a real special one, because not just for the fact that I'd done something like that, like the fact that I'd done it off my own back and dealing with everything, but I was doing in my personal life and then doing something as positive as that, and actually trying to do something that I felt like I was like succeeding in, you know what I mean? So it was a massive thing. And I learned loads about myself, you know what I mean? I learned like how game I actually was and how much I actually could put myself through. So that just stayed with us for the rest of the time competing. You know, it's still there now. I feel like I've still got the same mindset now. You know, I'll never turn the tough challenge down, and I pride myself on that fact. You know, so, and I think all that, just the confidence again, as you use that word again, I think I've instilled that in myself because of the uncomfortable situations I've put myself in and the scenarios that I've had there in junior. You know what I mean? There's not many people who's had as many fights in as many places around the world as I have now, and just doing as much stuff like that as I have, and that's a cool thing. I feel like that's why, as a coach now as well, I feel like that goes hand in hand with that, because the guys who are training under me and watching me still compete now are seeing me take these risks, seeing me proving my worth every time I'm out there, and seeing my mistakes as well, because then we all learn as a team from it collectively. So that's why I'm not afraid to take the risk and take some tough matches or big opportunities, because in the end of the day, even though it's me in there, everything that happens in these matches, I can then break down with the team and they can all learn from my mistakes, and it just develops everyone else ahead of time. You know, they can live through me making mistakes in my career and my job, learning all the way through, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to like basically mirror that back for them as well.
I think also as well, like I kind of get it with the whole school thing, because I left school I think with one qualification, but like I seem to do all right in the first few years of secondary school, and then the last couple of years I was just in sport and like and other things, and I just completely lost interest, you know. So like, and then just different career moves, but I certainly think for any the younger guys who are kicking around as well, to like understand that you don't have to just go down that route, there are other things.
Definitely.
And you moving into boxing and then MMA and then seeing what you're doing now with jiu-jitsu as well, I don't know much about that period that you talked about before with the skateboard, and all I've ever seen is some of the photos on Instagram, and I'm like, tell us about what you stopped boxing.
So when I was 17, I just fell out of love with the sport. You know, I felt like I was moving in another direction the way I was. I felt like give it a lot of time, and I just felt like other factors were coming in, politics and stuff. And for me, it was something that I did and I loved as a hobby, and I loved the way everyone was with each other and the trips away with the lads, and it was just the vibe, it was amazing. And then I felt like the older I got, the more it became like less of something that I was doing as a hobby and becoming something more that I felt like was expected of us. And when that became the place, and then I wasn't fully committed and that things were happening, I was losing. I lost the junior year final, I bashed my plug in for a while, and then I came back and then I fought Scottish International. And then I won that fight, and then they didn't give me the decision, and it had happened almost a couple of times in my career, and I thought, you know what, I'm grinding myself into the ground here, and things have gone knock on the way, and then people's opinions of me were changing, and they were questioning like how hard I was training and stuff like that, and it just became a bit too much, so I just left. I took a little bit of time off. And then I just took a little bit of time off, and what happened in that time off was Tony Jeffrey's dad was opened a gym with the Olympian, and I was just going there because I could use the gym to keep fit. So I was just going in there and I was just hitting the bags and stuff, and what happened was my old coach had actually opened a small little room in the back of the Olympian to teach martial arts in MMA. And one of the lads who I lived in my street was going to a couple of these classes, and I used to see it. And I knew what it was because I'd obviously watched the UFC on the TV with Gabby. I met when we finished working, actually, as I'd still watching the early UFC within. And it was something that I always fancied. And then obviously watching Never Back Down, you know, the film Never Back Down. I watched that and I just thought, you know what it is? Like, I come from a striking background and I was watching them. And I just thought, you know what? I'd love to give that a go. You know, I think this is not really happening with boxing. I'll call in one of these classes, and the first night I was there, and we were grappling with a few different people, and then from being where I was, being an open-class boxer, who was fighting anybody in the country at the time, whatever level, like, fighting some of the best kids around, and winning some of them as well, and I had a good win, that was an amateur boxer, I had a national title under my belt, you know, I did some decent stuff, with a good win, that was and beat some really good guys, so to come from that to then this, and then have no clue at all about it, it was either going to breakers or makers, and for me it was makers. You know, I felt like I felt like for me coming from that and having the mindset I had, thinking I could do what I did, and then to feel that and be so vulnerable and realise that it was just as if it was switching off in my head, and I was like, I need to be the best at this because I could never let anybody do this to me out there, because you have an opinion of what you would do in a fight until somebody actually who can control you controls you. And it's a shock to the system to understand that you are actually as vulnerable as you are. And for me, it was just the most biggest way to call ever, because I just thought, you know what, like, I need to be the best at this, I need to learn this, and I need to be just a step ahead of everyone. And just, it was an addiction, I just took all of this, and then I ended up fighting MMA straight away just before I turned 18. And then 18, 19, 10, 20, I turned pro straight away. And then from that, for me, as I say, it was a hobby, and it was something that we did. The gym became more and more frequent. I had more and more classes. And then when I turned pro, it was like same again thing, like become a hobby that it then became a job. And I felt like the pressure was having to turn up and having to do things. I don't know what's wrong with it. It's when someone else is telling me that I'm able to do it. Everything inside us just makes us not want to do it. And it is a problem. Like, it's truthful, honestly. I have got a real issue with it. I don't know why. Like, I've tried to have normal jobs. I've tried to do normal things. And it's just something that I've always really, really struggled with, you know. And it's a mad thing, I think, because it's true. Like, I don't know. This, like, it makes us feel the same as in school, just as if I'm trapped and someone else is, like, dictating what's happening in my life. And I feel like any time, you know, spend chasing something that I want to spend chasing is a waste of my time. So I just fell out of love with it, and I just stopped. I just made it some time off. I felt like I'd missed a lot of time period when all my friends were going out with the lads on lads' holidays and doing all the stuff. As I thought, most of my time, although I still had a taste of like going out with the lads and stuff, it was never really the same. So for me, I felt like I had some of that catching up to do. So I ended up just starting to skateboard with a couple of lads who I knew, and
And then same again, I just got addicted to that, and it was the lifestyle. And it's the same way it is with jiu-jitsu, though. It's a different kind of lifestyle. It's a similar surfing, skateboarding, riding bikes, like jiu-jitsu, which is a similar kind of like-minded person, like a bit of a free spirit, and that's what I am. You know, I try and get on with everyone. I haven't got any chew with anybody. I just like to be left in my own thing and do one things as well on the minute. And so I stopped. I had 4 years off. I traveled the world. I went to Copenhagen. I stayed in Amsterdam for weeks. We stayed in Atlanta for weeks. Went to Barcelona numerous times. We went everywhere, you know, and it was just a mad thing that we were doing. And then obviously I got a little part-time job, which was just sufficient enough was just to live the way I wanted to live for a while. You know, I was working with autistic children for a little while, so the hours were super flexible. I was doing respite, so we were going out on days out and stuff like that. And that felt like finding more for me once in my life. It was a job, but it was a sustainable thing because it was so relaxed hours. And it wasn't the normal, every day was different. We were going out doing these activities and stuff. So I did that for a long time and I enjoyed that. And then I just felt like it was time, you know, I went back and I felt like I was needing to get fit. I felt like because I wanted to do something with my time. I wanted to get fit, you know, and I was watching the lads fighting all the time, all the fight shows everywhere. I always study everyone's out, you know, somewhere I like to fill my time with them. I would watch the lads train. I thought, you know what, like, I'm young, I'm in a position where I've got free time, I'm going to come back and I'll just help the lads prepare for their fights, you know. I'm not really bothered about fighting because the amount of pressure it puts on is a mental strain every time that I wasn't really bothered. I just wanted to go back and train and see what I would be like, you know, after the 4 years off. And I went back for one session, and as soon as I was there, I just thought, you know what, like, I've had this time off and I've come here and this is where I'm at now. Imagine if I give it a year and I train properly. And that was it. So straight away from there, that was it. I was just back and I fought professionally straight away again and then just cracked it off from then and didn't really stop again after that until I started training full-time jiu-jitsu. I went to Norway for a little while and then I went full-time jiu-jitsu.
Would you, I want to go back a little bit because you said about your, you know, at school and then when a hobby turns into a job and not really being like told what to do. And I don't know what you're like, but I know I'm exactly the same, like I'll rebel. And that becomes difficult. And I know like I have that as a problem. So I really try to work on that a bit. And probably being that addictive personality in work, exercise, whatever, is a real challenge. Do you think if you, like, who you had around you at the time, and if they'd approached it a little bit differently with yourself, rather than, right, okay, it's now not a hobby, you're into a career, you know, was it coaches, was it families? Do you think if you had somebody different around you that could maybe have brought it out a little bit and said, listen, I don't think of it like a career. Enjoy it. You know, you're pretty good at what you do. Rather than more, I don't know if it was like, you must do this and must do that.
Me, I think that I've got a real problem. Like if I have this thing I say is that if you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly. And for me, it is, because I know how brutal that game is. And I felt if I was half-assed in what I was doing, I was in a position where I could get severely hurt. And I've learned them lessons from boxing. I've lost fights I shouldn't have lost. I've lost fights when I've just jumped in. I remember one of the times when I seen that first one I lost when I phoned my friend from the gym. I got a phone call when I was in school. I was training half-assed at the time. I had loads going on. I'd just been out for my dinner. And it was at a different way going along before. I was just for the sake of it. I went, I'll jump in, I'll do it. And learning lessons and being in them fights and having the horrible thing of having to wait for the final bell and another thing, like praying at the bell from being that exhausted. I learned them lessons early on, so for me, it wasn't so much about everyone else, it was more my own mental demons, because I knew what I had to do to be able to chase what I wanted in that, and at the time, I didn't have the capacity to force myself to do it, and people turned up, oh, Carl, you come training and stuff like that, and it was for me, I didn't want to be there, and I thought, well, if I'm not going to be there, and I'm not going to give this 100%, it's not worth doing. Like, you have everyone telling me, oh, this, you can do this, you can do this, this is how good you are, and this is all these different variables. But at the end of the day, for me, I've lost fights I should never have lost, and multiple times it's happened, as you know, not being in the right headspace or not being 100% what I have. And I just think at the time for me, it was just that I had that much going on, like that people didn't even understand, you know, and I just thought it was just too much for this. Like, I just thought, now the pressure was, I I was not what I enjoyed about it at all. The expectations at the time, and I just thought, you know what, I just want to be left to myself to just be happy, you know what I mean? It was just something I always struggled with. I just wanted to be content and just actually feel like I was like happy just in myself. So I just took some time off and met a bunch of old new friends and stuff like that. And some of them, as I see, some of them are still super close to you now. I still keep in regular contact with them, you know. And as I said, I just made a whole new community for myself and people, and it was just refreshing, you know, to not have the expectations of having to be someone or trying to be whatever. I was just being myself, and I really enjoyed it. And you know what, as well, in the matter as well, I used to bring, you know, I used to think, God, how much further along could I be now in my career if I'd have done that? But then at the same time, I might force myself to do it then, and I might have never gone back to competitive martial arts or training in general, you know. I could have gone completely different paths, so everything worked out in my mind the way it should have, because it's led us to exactly where some of the craziest heights I could imagine, you know. I've met some of the biggest islands in my life now and traveled the world and doing something as wild as professional cage fighting, you know what I mean? I've done some crazy things and lived memories most people will never get to experience. So for me, I am massively proud of where I was to where I've been and the things I've had to endure and the things I've lived through and to then now be where I'm at now and to have the gym we've got and to actually see the massive positivity change in people's lives. Like, there's people coming on the gym and you physically see the change, and not just weight loss, not just in how they are, but in everything, their mindset, their lifestyle, their health, you know. And it's, for me, that's the biggest accomplishment ever, because it was only 6 months ago when I was in the, should I really do it? Should I try it? And I tried it in the past, and I just went and got a lease on a small little place, and within the first night we outgrew, like the first night I didn't even bring water, and I just thought, we left it, I knew I needed to know that we could run before we walked, so I didn't want to rush into anything, because I didn't have a pen in the name at the time, you know, and I just did it, and look where we are now, you know, we've got like nearly 70 full-time members, we've got members who come in every day, like from different gyms, cross-training, we've got drop-ins every day, there's 38 people, I think, now on the beginner's course that runs for 8 weeks, some of them will turn over, and it's not even like, I know, like, obviously, like, sometimes kids come in and they can't even afford to train, you know what I mean? And I think for the price I gave for the memberships to be able to train unlimited as many times a day as we have on as well, we've got a 7-day-a-week schedule. I do the 3:00 to 6:00 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's 9:30 a.m. Monday to Friday, 6:00 p.m. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. Saturday morning. We've got a woman's only class. We've got a kids class. We've got teens classes that run 6 days a week. And as I said, this class is on 7 days a week, and you get all that. It's £10 you drop in. So if you imagine that in a 5-week month, it's crazy. And I offer a membership for £70, and you can come as many as you want. I've put a tiny bit of money now in the weights room. And if you remember, if the unlimited you pay £70 a month, you can go there and train on our weights stuff as well. You know, and I feel like that's fair, you know, for what they're getting in their wealth of experience in the room.
Well, I mean, that was the next question I was going to ask, because the experience that you've got and something that we haven't talked through is, like, I suppose that the high technology MMA career as well, but like, just not even just the training, because I've seen the extremes of what you need to do to prepare for them fights. It just blew my mind at the time. And also you mentioned as well, you know, what you've got going on in your personal life as well, to get in that cage the way you did, to be so focused. I'm really interested to know how you prepared for that mentally, who you had around you, family, trainers, and how, when you, once you got inside that cage.
So my last one was probably the worst prepared I've ever been in my life, ever. In hindsight, as brutal as it is, I'm glad it happened. It was because I needed that to happen to understand where I needed to go in life. Like, it was a huge opportunity, and it was postponed, and we ended up doing it in the lockdown. Like, I was out of shape, I wasn't even training, like, but it had been postponed that long. I was in a position where I was like, well, I'm going to get paid this much money to have a fight. Like, I'm not bothered. I was massively out of shape. I was drinking all the time, taking drugs, smoking cigarettes, just in the worst shape of my life. I was depressed, massively depressed, you know what I mean? I was in a bad way, struggling with money, obviously, to keep the kids, everything, and where we were, there was no obviously there's nothing happening in the world, there was the lockdown. And this was an opportunity for us to be able to keep the family afloat. And it's something that, obviously, I lost my mum after a long struggle with illness for nursing life. But she'd been in that intensive care for a long time, leading up to this point. And I lost my grand around the same time. And the only thing I had, as selfish as it sounds, even though children weren't enough for us to get us through the time, the only slight thing I had that was taking my mind off the fact of everything I had going on was the fact that I had a fight coming on. So I just used that as the little thing to get us through the grieving process. So all I did was I just pretty much ran the whole time, every day, multiple times a day. I wasn't bothered about training anymore. I didn't want to be there. I wasn't really happy where I was at in the gym. And I was just doing bits of grappling. I was just training with Alice, one of my really close friends. She's still a coach now in Jiu-Jitsu. And because I was going there, and that was me and still going down. I wasn't bothered about the fight. It's the only time in my life in the fight where I've actually quit. I never quit. I never have. And I remember just the realization, and just as honest as I can be, I ended up in a bad position. I was exhausted. I was drained. I didn't feel good. I didn't feel good going out of the fight. I was in the land room. I think it ended up being nearly 48. I was quarantined in the room with me and Ellis. The boys next door to my opponent's family, and everything. Every time I was bumping in, it was just hardcore, and it was just a bad experience. And I just remember just everything about it was bad. The preparation, everything. And I was fighting a really good fighter as well at the time. That's obviously nothing taken away from him. He did his job, you know. After the fight, all the beef leading up with it, I was glad it happened, because that was something that comes through the most brutal time in my life, you know. So having that fight there, although it was a shame, like, I've never quit. If you watch me fight with Nathan Grayson, I was beaten within an inch of my life, and I got through that, and I still finished him. And this fight there, the first time he got on me back, I was defending the choke. Second time, and I remember lying there, and it was mad. I just remember thinking, I'm done with this, I'm done with it, I don't want to be here. I didn't care, I was just done with the whole thing. And I tapped when he was really, as I see it, I had both in hands, but he got these squeezes, he'd already popped my jaw out of here. I'm crushing the back of my face from there, so the choke wasn't as tight as the earlier ones. I was just done. And it's the only time in my life, hand and heart, that I've ever actually quit in a fight. So that, for me, after that, I was like soul searching for a while. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was doing my career. I was over the whole thing. I went away. I used my last money I had to get some courses. I'm still paying some of them now. I moved to Norway to work out in Norway for a little bit to try and provide for my family. And what happened out there was it was just complete isolation in the mountains, and I just lost the plot. I come back. When I came home, I didn't feel like I belonged there. I felt like I didn't feel comfortable in my own family, and it was a weird thing. The last thing I did before I left Norway, I hadn't trained in a whole year at all, nothing. Didn't do a single session in a year. And when I was in the world, kind of was the end of time in Norway, the guy who I'm really friends with, he's recently just died. He was called Jürgen. Beautiful person, just amazing guy. Someone I'll end up getting really close to, such a good guy. He said, oh, you should go and check out this place in Trondheim. It's like an hour and a half away from where I was, so I took the words along with me. And I went and I trained in this gym in the middle of this mad place in Norway with these cool guys. And they were quite a new gym. And I ended up coaching some of the class with them, even though some of them didn't speak English. And I left there, and just the way it made us feel, like, to the way I had been feeling the whole time I was out there, was just, it just made us realise, like, what I'd loved even the whole time through MMA. The thing I loved the most had been jiu-jitsu the whole time. Most of my wins I came from a striking background. I would catch people, and half of my wins I'd end up choking them in the main. And that was something that I just loved. And so when I rang Alice straight away after that session, I was telling him, because I texted him when I was in the US, and I'm going to train at this gym. And I know how much Alice wanted to be in this gym as well, training with him, you know. And then when I came back straight away, I was like, this is what I'm up with. What I have to do to make this happen, I'm going to train jiu-jitsu full time. That's what I'm going to do. I didn't care how it happen. I'm going to do it. And as crazy as it is, I've said this before as well. I remember when I come home and I was saying this to Hannah. And Hannah was obviously covered, not knowing what was going to happen money-wise. No, I wasn't going to come back with me. In the same sense, I think she was happy as well, because I think it would have been the end of us, you know, because I was really struggling with that. And I remember being stood in the sitting room, and I said to her, I'm gonna compete in jiu-jitsu full time. I'm gonna fight on Polaris and Grapple Fest, some of the biggest shows in the world. I'm gonna get sponsored. I'm gonna open my own gym, and I'm gonna start an event. And I've done every single one. vividly manifested it all. I knew it was going to happen. And this is the truth. God's honest truth. I believe in it so much now. Like, everything I've said that I'm going to set out and do, I've already achieved already. And it's given us even more motivation to just be bigger and better every time. Like, if you could bottle what we had in our gym and people that you could sell in your little scene, you know, like, it's the vibe in there and what we're doing for people. And it's just, every week, it's just like another thing that it's just like maybe we able to just push on and the results are showing, you know what I mean? And we've only been up in 6 months, and if you see somehow how well some of the kids are doing and some of the stuff we've got going on already, you'll see why it's working, you know, for the recipe for that. I think finally once in my life, I feel like the purpose. And that's, even when I was a professional fighter, I never felt like a purpose. I thought it was my identity, but I didn't feel it was what I was meant to do. I'm competing jiu-jitsu full-time. I love it. I still get the same buzz when I go out there. I'm still building my following. I'm still building my brand. I've been sponsored by Progress, which was a dream of mine. I used to see Ellis rolling in Progress gear all the time. And I would tell myself that I would be there rolling one day, sponsored on the same team and doing four shoots with him. And I truly believed it in myself. Even though back then, I had something like this, still have, like, some of the best black belt BJJ practitioners in the world. And then I was just some MMA guy who come in and was just rough around the edges. But I truly believed it, and I've done it. I'm on Progress now. I'm on one of the biggest jiu-jitsu brands in the world currently. And I'm on their team now. And everything I set out to do, I've done and exceeded my expectations, you know what I mean? And so I feel like finally, once I have actually got a purpose, and it's a good feeling to have, you know what I mean?
Something that's come through, and I want to ask you. You talked about that terror, when you were feeling terrified in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I remember like Richard Hartman's when he was in, he talked about, we asked him for confidence, and he said, courage comes first. The courage to do it when you don't know, you don't have the confidence, and then you develop the confidence. It feels like that courage was there, but there's times when you've decided it's not for you, and then there's times like that fight, the first fight, and these other examples that you're talking about, where you thought, no, I am. And for me, it's, how did you know that happened? It sounds like it's a feeling rather than something like a rational tick box thing. It sounds like a feeling, but you know there was a difference.
Feel and prepare for better feel. And that's what it is. It all comes down to that. And for me, the times I've knew, I mean, that's not saying that you prepare as hard as you can, but you know, it's a game of inches, you know, you go in the shower, you get wet. That's not saying you can prepare as hard as you want, even against anyone, you can go in there and get kicked and get put to sleep. But every time, if you know you've left no stone unturned, it's harder, it's a lot harder for them, a little bit of self-doubt to creep into your mind, because it's a constant battle, you've got to think, right? It's, well, especially in fighting, in any kind of big pressure thing, whatever you're doing, whether it's business, life, fighting, competitive sports, whatever it is, music, could be anything, it's always going to be a mental battle. You're always going to have doubters, you're always going to have people who try and doubt you and put doubt into your mind. The number one thing is your own mind itself. For me, I feel like when I'm happy and I'm training hard, and I feel like I hit that, just that when I'm firing on all cylinders, that's when I feel like, for me, the confidence is there, and that comes through the hard work and effort. And whereas in times when I've not had that, it's when I've either not prepared properly, or I've been injured, or I've had a horrendous weight cut, which is pretty much 90% of my career is what I've had. When I fought James Gallagher, that was a huge weight cut. I didn't even see it to anyone about how severe it was. But when I fought Nathan Grayson, that was equally as bad. When I fought Nathan Grayson, I lost over more than a stone in the bath the night before the weigh-in. And that was without the rest of the weight that I cut through at the fight camp. I lost 3 stone or something in that fight camp. I came down from 85, 86 kilos with tits and cellulite to fight the number one guy in Euro Cage, where he's world champion, who just had highlight reel knockout against a world class fighter who's been Dex Torton to be in the UFC at the time. And I was fighting him, and I'd come back from nowhere, come back because I was training in Sweden, Came back there, and I still had a bad injury in my shoulder. I ended up getting concussed in sparring, I think it was the week out from the fight. And then I was still nursing a bad injury from one of the fights in South Africa that had travelled through, you know, so I still feel it now. But I ended up in a horrible position, my shoulder ripped off. I still ended up winning the fight, but left as an injury there, that'll be there forever. And as I say, just same again, you know, I had a huge weight cut. I came back from there. Normally, I would say to myself, if I'm 70 kilos, 7 days out from the weigh-in, and if I had 61.2, if I've got, let's say, a stone, just over a stone, and lose that week, I know that's doable. And I can do that without affecting myself too much. And I pretty much had that to do the night before. I fought Nathan Grayson. I was 68.9 on the right, after starving myself horrendously as well for this whole time. Like, not even safe levels of just like starvation, trying to do what I would do. Just tiny little meals and over chewing to do digest more, dribbling. And then I was doing 10 litres of water, hyperhydrating my body, did a humongous weight cut. Same tunnel vision when I was walking on the scales, like literally black rings around, I couldn't feel. Breathing was horrible, everything just horrendous, and then to have to push. So I did as many breaths as I could the night before the game, and the same again on the morning of the game. Killing myself.
Energy levels, bad.
Shot the floor. And then to fight the most jacked killer you could imagine, the person who's got muscles upon muscles, and seeing him now with his dreadlocks out of the way, and it's just looking absolutely terrifying. That's in the back of my mind as well. He's a savage, not a puncher. High level, not a one shot kind of guy. Super explosive, not out power. Seeing him knocking out really high level kids. And then feeling where I was feeling. Had the worst weight cut ever. Ruined myself beyond belief. Fighting injured and then fighting with a concussion from the sparring session that I had the week out before I started the week. I remember being backstage there wanting to cry, feeling about my daughter. Just being in the most darkest place ever. Behind the curtain. Not wanting people trying to talk. It was just feeling not like just not even want to entertain at all, like for a man to be upset, all emotions, self-doubt trying to come in, and I just remember thinking just whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen, I'm gonna get out there and give it the best shot, but I'm not gonna die. That's what I remember telling myself. I'm not gonna die.
Did that change when you got engaged?
No. Normally for me, it's normally as soon as I walk out from the curtain. As soon as I feel the crowd and the noise, the whole is gone. We're fighting him now. Then that's the only fight in my whole life that I've got all the way through the walkout, into the cage, heard the crowd, everything. And this is the only fight in my life where, even still to the point until we ended up fighting, I was nervous. I remember looking at his coach, I remember watching him coming out, getting in, and I remember just shaky legs, everything terrifying. None of that sell like 1,000 tickets there or something like that. All the people in the metal radio arena screaming for us, and just remember just still being terrified until we started fighting, and then I got off to the worst start of a fight you could ever imagine. And got my head out of all the pieces, got my eye bust open, got my head smashed in, and then I took his back and choked him. And if there was ever a time I was going to quit, that would have been the fight to do it 10 times over. You know what I mean? And I didn't quit then. And even the Fires Jacobs one in South Africa, if you remember that one, where he had me back and his elbow in his head and split my head open. Even that one, I never felt any of that. But in that 1 second of that fight, even when I was in that position, when I was getting hit with them shots and black flash and I was seeing the blood everywhere, not once did I not think I was going to win that fight ever. And even in them bad times, and that one with the Nathan Grayson, you know, like, it was just, I had a plan what I was going to do. I did believe I could box for him, but I knew that would be his best chance of being able to beat us if he caught us a stupid shot on the way, just throwing his gloves in the fight, and not a punch head, it's not like taking a normal shot. You've got a good chance of getting slept if someone lands a clean one, and that's what, you know what I mean? It's little rocks on your hands, you know what I mean? So for me, my plan was to just drill, get up to the fence. I knew I had a gas tank, although I had a massive weight cut. That was in the back of my mind. Am I going to be able to push the seam up? Because I know it affects massively how much water I've cut. Am I going to be able to work this guy? Because he's a specimen. He's a cardio machine as well. Super explosive. So my plan was to push him from the fence, get him down the fence, lie him, box him up on the floor, get him tired, and eventually try and submit him. And when I shot in, I didn't expect to take him down. I half took him down, we framed on the head, and that's when we just started on the road, elbows and punches, just at my garage for about four and a bit minutes. Still, I was smashed to pieces, basically. I remember when I took his back, the full room was spinning when I was on his back. The full room was spinning. Noises were just distorting everything. It was crazy. Just this mad experience that I just never I'll never forget you, you know what I mean? And when I even talk about it now, that's what I mean. I always have that. Because when I
you can tell, when I talk about it,
yeah. I just feel like I that's why I love jiu-jitsu so much, because I can feel this every week. And I do this till I'm dead, you know what I mean? I'm going to do this, even if I have to be in a wheelchair, I'm still going to try and get out there, you know what I mean? I love it. It's what I need in life. And it's the only time in my life when things have fell apart is when I've not had the gym. And that's the truth. So for me, it's a savior for me.
Well, there's a bit I want to go back to, because we did a photo shoot last year and I'll never forget it. And I want to, you know, we both had close to us as an old family. And like, I know it's deeply affected yet. Was there any point when you lost your mum and you lost your grand where you just thought, I'm just done with everything. Never mind anything. And I know you've got the little things and you've got Hannah. You know, and sometimes, like, I've been in these positions before, it doesn't matter who you've got around you. Did you just ever get to that point?
The whole time, for about 6 months ago. To this one in a long time. I genuinely feel like I've had a purpose now, since I've done this and since I've got people under my tutelage and doing learning from me. Like, now I finally see. And I know that now this is building up for my future as well, because not only see it when it is all said and done and I'm not competing, I'm still going to be a coach, but I can live through everyone else's successes and I can still be a massive part of their journey. So for me, seeing, like, even every single day, I'll teach a session, this is coach on the street, and every single day I'll get a message, at least one from the squad about telling us, like, how much they love being a part of the team and what it's doing for them. And obviously, as well, with the men's mental health thing that we're doing as well, I'm seeing a massive, just a change in people from that as well. And it's something that I feel like, for me, it's a really, like, it's just a warm thing, you know what I mean? I get that. It's such a good thing for me to be in a position where I can actually do something for other people as well. And I think, like, even on me fighting, I always try to be that person, you know, kids with messages. I always try my best to get back to everyone. I've sent people rash guards, signed. I've done all sorts of stuff like that. You know, I still keep in touch with loads of them now, where loads of people who've had, like, alcohol problems and stuff like that. I still talk to people like that all the time. And I feel like now as well with this, it's just that extra little thing. And I feel like that's one thing that I pride myself on. You know, I feel like I am that kind of person. And to finally be in a position to help more people, it's a really, really special thing. As I mean, like, I feel like it's given so much more purpose and just motivation for myself to be better. You know, I want more for myself always, you know, just to benefit everyone else.
You've been through those life experiences. I think the first time I felt that when I was getting a lot of messages was when I went sober, when I had the 3 years sober. And the messages that were flooding in was unreal, from guys and women, to be fair, who were just really struggling. You know, I admire the fact that you've done that. And because I just had clarity all of a sudden, the things just changed, like, overnight. But then you get this realization of, like, hell, like, how many other people are in this position, and they don't really know how to overcome that. And we get it. I still get it still regularly now. I have been drinking for about the last 6 months again, but actually that's 12 months and it's completely different. But even guys, you know, with us, we're close, we're confident. So when you get those messages, you go, okay, this is more my purpose. And I know, like, we sell clothes, but that's not my purpose. My purpose is making sure guys feel confident, they feel great. And when you're hearing messages like that as well, so talk me through, because obviously you've been following the club, you're setting that up, and what you're doing. You're doing some great things as well with the guys, not just obviously on the jiu-jitsu side, but on the mental health side. And you've just set the club up as well on Sunday, is that right?
Yeah, so every Sunday at 9 a.m. The reason why I came around, Simon, was, like, not to mention anybody's names or anything like that, but for me, you see time and time again, people come into the gym and it's not like all the gyms, you know, you come in, and as soon as they come in, they realise what kind of place it is, and the respect everybody gets, and that's, I've been in gyms my whole life, and for me, I feel like I've finally learned a way to really make an effort and change people's views, so when they come in, I feel like they're immediately made to feel welcome, and we'll make a fuss at everybody in the room, you know what I mean? There's no one bigger than anyone. You know, I've got a load of different people coaching now with us, there's no one. No top dog, everybody is on their own thing, you know, everyone's got their own kids, everyone knows their own view. It's just all about respect, and I feel like people all come in, it's always people, it's usually the same kind of people who's tormenting somewhere over, you know, and just looking for some kind of escape. And for me, I try and make the sessions as full of love and joy as I can. And the tunes are pumping, the vibe's amazing, and everyone's just getting stuck into it, and everyone's there helping each other. That's the difference, you know, people are going above and beyond, actually look after each other in the gym and outside of the gym. I feel like once people are connected with that and realise like how supportive the gym actually is. And one of our guys the other week he went off and he was really unhappy at what was going on in his own personal life. And he was in a really bad way, and I'm not going too many deals, but he was really at the end of the way, you know. We ended up going out and we found him, and I just know what the gym does for him and his life and his circumstances. So I just thought, you know what, if this can work for one of our lads and it's working for me and it's working for me, and those who are working in the gym, let's there see if healing, let's see in there, here's the goal of getting rid of this. Why didn't I do something that's got nothing to do with training? But in the same place where all this energy and all this positivity is anyway, and the people there now, because I see the vibe, I know what it's like, and everyone who comes is immediately just on that same wavelength, because if they're not, they wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? You feel it straight away as soon as you come in. I thought, the gym's the place to do it. I'm finally in a position where I'm making a little bit of money. I'm not a millionaire, never that, but I'm paying my bills, you know what I mean? So that's all I care about. So I was like, well, what's a little bit of extra? What's a couple of kettles? What's a bit of biscuits and some coffee and that every week? And we'll put a free charge for life. We'll put lights back out of the backyard and we'll just do it. It's costing us nothing to do it, really, you know? And even if nobody came for 6 minutes and one person came and it made a difference in one person, then that 6 minutes is completely worth it. So that's the mindset of what it is. I'll be in the gym anyway. What's one more early morning? You know what I mean? It's not even early morning anyway, really.
You know, I like that because it's like, I mean, it sounds like that kind of environment where it doesn't matter what you do for a living, how much money you've got, what possessions you have, you know, big, small, flipping, whatever, and like extremely inclusive. And it has to be for that kind of thing not to work, but like to be right. It has to feel that way. It has to feel welcoming. Especially when we've talked a lot. We have. There's a lot of common things come out throughout this, and I think guys find it like really hard sometimes when they're lonely, sort of coming to an environment like that around other people. Just will give them the confidence when they walk out of there as well.
Definitely, it's. I feel like people come in and I can speak firsthand. I've been in loads of different gyms my whole life, and I just know personally that it's just different. It's different the way everyone is. Like it's not even like it's just one thing. I did it's a collective. Everybody's there and everybody's checking in, and everyone's genuinely caring. And what we've got a group and stuff like that, and everyone's just on the same wavelength. And it just every time it goes, it's just another layer of that. You know what I mean? So it's just. It's inevitable the way it's gone, you know what I mean? It's such a cool, warm, welcoming place, and that was exactly why I just thought, you know what? Nothing's happening on the Sunday morning anyway. Most people will be off. Why not come along and just have a little men's weekend? Well, we'll just have a little bit of crap on the Sunday morning. Easy going, no pressure, no, just me bitching, me and that show. We'll just come in and just, even if you don't even speak, you can just sit there and have a coffee. Chill out, just have a bit of crap with the lads.
I think Sunday as well, just from experience, like I've really had to change my mindset on Sundays, and I probably all the same, if you go to work on a Monday, and you know, how we're feeling on that Sunday night, a Sunday, you know, it's a good time.
Yeah, exactly, imagine that, you can put yourself in a positive mood for the rest of the day, even knowing you've got work the next day. There's your week off to a good start straight off the bat.
I bet you see a difference with you know, just guys, as obviously like you say, the girls are coming in as well. Like from kind of going back a little bit to when you first went to that boxing gym, I bet in a short space of time within them 6 months already, you know, you're seeing some characters being built in there.
For sure.
Just being around the likes of yourselves.
Yeah, there's a massive change in people straight away. I mean, like in the women as well, you know, obviously we've got a ladies coach, Josie. She's really good, she competes a lot as well. She's such a nice person as well. She does a women's room class on the weekend as well. So I've got on a Saturday, I think that's really cool. I don't let anybody in the gym around that time, just the women. I let them have their own completely secluded time frame, and then just go in there. have the full confidence to know that the public place themselves and just enjoy themselves. I think that's a really good thing to do in there. And she trains full time with us as well. She's in all the other sessions. That's all any woman have ever been. There's a couple of different ladies there and members now. And they train full time with the men, you know. And then anyone who needs to get changed, there's a woman's changing room there. They can use better at a woman, you know what I mean? I feel like we are trying to do things as fair and be as equal as we can be, you know. It's because it always has been a male dominated sport. And we love the women who come in and train with us, you know. There's some of the like, brightest members of our room, always happy coming in, bringing the vibe up, you know. And we welcome as many of them that want to come, you know. It's such a cool place, as I see it. It is really a cool place, Sam, and I hope one time you can come along, call in and make a session and have coffee on one of the Sunday mornings. And as I say, the doors open anywhere, we always have people come in and just sit around the side of the mat and watch a session just to see what it's about. You know, it's cool, it's really good crap, man.
Where do you see going? Where do you, you touched on before finding your purpose, which I think you've just got to go through life experience. You've got to go through things that, you know, you're taking at the brink. Where in your mind now, it sounds like, you want that more sort of relaxed, obviously it's not a career, it's a business that you're running ultimately here as well, but where would you like it to go for yourself?
I think for me personally, I think why we reach for the stars, you know, I truly believe in a few years' time we could be one of the best gyms in the UK. Like, I think that is inevitable. I think if we keep doing what we're doing, and keep pushing the way we are and just always striving to be better, never perfect. Obviously, no one's ever perfect, and you never will be, especially in a game like this. You know, there's always something that's going to negate something you're doing, and it's all just all about experience and getting ready for the next stage. But I just see us being a really big household name in this industry. You know, I know this for a fact, it will be that. You know, I think just the way we're doing it and the things we're doing and the way we're promoting it and how people are treating, I just think it's inevitable, really. I think we will. And I think we'll probably have a lot of gyms affiliate under us. You know, I've already got one who's under me now in the gym. And another thing as well, this is just how I know we've got a good reach already. Like, I started that men's mental health thing already, two gyms, the gym in Ireland and the gym in Blackpool, so I've copied and using the same thing, you know, and I think that's amazing. Why wouldn't you want that? You know, it's nothing to put your hands in your pockets on the weekend sport, it costs pennies to potentially make a massive change. So I think even that just showing me how much reach we've got and making a difference. I just think we'll be a really good household name in India, and I'm really truly believe it. I think already we're off to a flying start. We've filmed some amazing stuff in the gym. We've already had a couple of events in the gym as well. And I just see us just keep building. I think we will be a huge team one day. We already are a massive team. And as I said, it's not even been half a year yet, I don't think. And that's what we're doing that amount of time. Imagine if I'm in this family society I'm in now for the next 3 years. We're extending it, we're building the floor, we're adding more mat space. We've already got a huge mat space compared to most people's gyms in the Northeast and most people's gyms in the country, let's say. I just think the possibilities are endless. If the people who are above my place ever move, I'll take that on as well. We'll make sure that happens. You know, we'd love to have like a franchise, but one day and have a couple of gyms representing us and more gyms affiliated with our own name. I think that is a massive possibility.
What does success look like with this? What would it if you everyone talks about 5 years and stuff like that? That's too far to look ahead.
Smaller reach of the rules.
Yeah. So what is success? What would that mean? Would that mean producing the next champion, the next many things?
Success for me is just to have what we've got now. I feel like this is the start of the successful thing. You know, I feel like the way we all people, there's no pressure on anyone. There's no politics. You can come in wearing someone else's gym's cloth there. You can come in, you can compete if you want to compete. You can get you ready for fights and stuff. If you don't want to do that, no pressure. Men and women on the match together. There's teams there. We've even got a kids' class on the weekend. Like, I just think success is just to keep having what we've already got and keep building that. I mean, success for me is already, we've already lived it multiple times. You know, I took a squad of 12 people are our first like real competition. We've got 17 medals, and that's kids who've never done anything. Now we've got our teens are competing at adult division and submitting them in that. And that to me is success. I'm not bothered about riches and all that nice stuff. It's cool if you've got it, awesome. But that's not my first line of success. My first line of success is having lads coming and competing and winning matches. I've got travelling lasses going, like Josie there, she's just travelled away there Saturday, and she's just been a really tough opponent there. We'll fight with them. That's the way I would see success. Treating people right and building them up, that's success to me. So as long as you stay on this trajectory, it's inevitable.
Struggling to get to all that skill. Treating people the right way. And then sort of have an environment where you can come in and, kind of learn all these things as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's fantastic. I'm going to wrap this up. I think we could talk. There's another 10 episodes here, I think.
I can talk in
the coming months. Like, there's so many things I don't think we've probably even touched on. The closing question. Bit of nostalgia here, to think back from your childhood. What's one thing that you think of that puts that smile on your face, that nostalgic, it could be a product, it could be anything from your childhood?
Nostalgia for me is still a massive part of my life now. I used to always travel down to Croft in Leicestershire, and I used to camp out in the end of the back garden. We had farming trips down there, but I just used to camp in the back garden. I used to love it. You had all the best camping gear, everything. It was just the best thing in the world, for me. I was going down there and just in this massive backyard, that's a huge back garden, ponds and everything. I just used to love it, and that for me was like just the best thing ever. So it's still a massive part of my life, I'm still wild camping all the time. I used to take a tent, and then I stopped, and I started taking hammocks, then I stopped, and I would just take a tarp and a bivy bag, and I'm away, and I do it all the time. I did it last weekend, I was there. Last weekend, the weekend before, I tried to get them last weekend. I'm a bullet, I just all year round, I love it. And that's a nostalgic memory for me. Like, just being there outside, I love it. There's no way it is about it. I just feel like I need another life. And when things get too much for us, or things pile up, which they do very often, because there's not enough days in the week or hours in the day for me to get through the queue. I start morning, I finish late every single day. I've got 3 kids. The only time I get to work, I only private lessons. Book me lessons, promote my social media as late at night when I finish. So I never really sleep much. I never have any real, it's even less now. So the only way when things get impossible is that suddenly. Yeah, I know the gym is something that is in the escape. I love it. But it's draining on my body. So a lot of the time, the work side, my class has become the number one priority. Teaching the squad and then the private lessons is my job aside from that, which I do when I can. And I'm obviously injured and stuff. So that's still an escape in itself. It always will be. I need it in my life. But another escape of mine is obviously getting out into the wild, and it's just stuck with us since being a kid. You can take me in, I've done any of the outdoor shops, and it's just such a buzz. If you go in and I come out and I've got stuff I never use every single time. I went to the army shop the other day, I've got pans, pots, whatever you can imagine, trousers, jacket. But I just love it. For me, that's my nostalgia.
That's campervan trip I came back from. I haven't got a campervan, I just borrowed it, and I've got to go outdoors and bought a stove. I'm going to pants here or anything. I'm going to gas, but I'm like, right, I'm going. I'm with you. Outdoors for me is everything. Walking, whatever. It's definitely something I need to do more of. I love that. And just one final thing, how will our listeners find you? How will they find the gym? And yourself personally?
Cal Pacino MMA on Instagram, Cal Pacino on Facebook, and our gym is Exile Jiu-Jitsu on YouTube and on Instagram and TikTok as well. And I think even if you're not a fan of Jiu-Jitsu or you don't even understand what it is or you've never even heard of it, check it out, have a look, check some of the videos out and you'll see how. It should be an asylum. It's not an academy, it's an asylum. And everybody in there is mental. And everybody in there is amazing. And some of the best people you'll ever see. And you can keep up with it with it all in there. I'm watching you have some amazing acts.
I've got to say as well, we were talking before. I mean, if nothing else, it's pure entertainment. Especially keeping your eyes peeled, maybe for the weekend coming. I highly recommend that.
I'll stick you with that one.
But you're doing some great things. I'm getting goosebumps. I've followed you for a long time now, known you a long time, and what you're doing in the gym now, it really is the mental health side of it and everything else. But you're doing some great stuff. So thanks very much. Really appreciate you coming on the couch. Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks so much for that. Appreciate it. Cheers, lads.
hope that you enjoyed the episodes and got something from that. If you did, we would love you to share our podcast.
And if you're not already, subscribe to the show and leave a rating or review. That really helps spread the word.
I'd also like to thank our podcast producer, Benoyle, for doing a sensational job.
And thanks to the awesome Logan Nicholson of musicthemakers.com for the music for the podcast.
Catch you in the next episode. Thanks, guys.